Today we come to the concluding section of the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Yesterday we discussed briefly about 4.34, which is the oft-quoted verse by Srila Prabhupada. So now, what is the practical application of this verse for Arjuna? Krishna is telling that go to a spiritual master, surrender unto him, make inquiry from him, and render service unto him. So now, is Krishna wanting Arjuna to go to a forest and find some spiritual master? No, in 2.7 already Arjuna has accepted Krishna as the spiritual master. Karpanya dosho bhagata subhava. So Krishna is confirming to Arjuna in one sense that what you have done is already right. Now you have to implement the course of action that you have already chosen. That means he has to render service to Krishna. That's the specific application. Now also, in material life, when we acquire knowledge, there also there is inquiry. Now we hear, we inquire, if somebody wants to get a PhD, then for all practical purposes, you know, you have to hear from your PhD guide, you have to also ask questions, and then you also have to render service.
Actually, especially the higher we go in the educational hierarchy, you know, a lot depends on the discretion of the education authority. You know, the PhD guide has to be satisfied. That's why many religious-minded scientists find it difficult to bring in the God paradigm into science because their guides are hostile to it. The mainstream establishment is either atheistic or at least non-theistic. Non-theistic means they don't want to bring God into the picture. So that principle applies even in material life. Although the vital difference is that the service is done not with a service attitude but with a self-seeking attitude. Spiritual knowledge is different from material knowledge in the sense that spiritual knowledge is transformational. It's not just informational. So we see Narad Muni served the Bhakti Vedantas, as Srila Prabhupada uses the word for them. And what happened by that? He got the same desire, the same attraction that they had to the Supreme Lord. So this service just talked about in the spiritual realm is actually with the intention to transform our desires. As we say, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya, Chitta Te Kariya Aikya. That means the Guru's desires become our desires. So spiritual knowledge is theoretical, and how does it become realized? It is through service. When we say we have to apply spiritual knowledge, what is the primary application? The primary application is to render service, because the essence of all spiritual knowledge is that I am a servant. So when we apply spiritual knowledge, just like when we eat food, when there are sufficient digestive enzymes in the food, then the food transforms into energy. So like that, when we take in spiritual knowledge, the digestive enzymes that will transform the spiritual knowledge into spiritual energy is our service attitude. Without service attitude, we can get a lot of knowledge, we can get a lot of information, but that information will not transform into devotional enthusiasm. It is said to know God is to love God. Actually, if we are truly acquiring knowledge about God in a devotional way, then the more we acquire knowledge, the more our attraction and our desire to serve Krishna will increase. If that is not increasing, then that's because sevaya component is missing. And you know, we all hear the story of Dasharathi. We wonder what is so difficult about Sarvadharman Purandaje. I can understand this verse. I can explain this verse. What is so secret about it that Ramanacharya revealed, which Dasharathi was a big scholar, did not know? Actually, the secret is not just a matter of analysis. The secret is a matter of deeper realization. So deeper realization, deeper acceptance. So by service, basically what happens is, that Krishna reveals himself in the heart. Sevon mukhe jivado swayameva spuratyada. And that's why there are a lot of academic scholars who study the Vedic scriptures, but because they don't render service, they don't get any realization. So after telling this particular process of how spiritual knowledge is to be acquired, then Krishna describes, if we acquire spiritual knowledge in this way, what will be the result? This is the 35th verse.
Yajnatva na punar moham evam yasyasi pandava yena bhutanya sheshani rakshasya atmanya thomai. By this knowledge, you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine.
Yes. So, yajnatva, once you know this, the first thing will happen is, you will not fall into illusion again. Na punar moham evam. Evam means, that the way you are in illusion right now, you will not fall into illusion. So, the fruit of spiritual knowledge is, freedom from illusion. Freedom from illusion. So if somebody studies Bhagavad Gita, studies Bhagavatam, and still is in the bodily conception of life, attached to the sense objects, that actually has not acquired this knowledge. Na punar moham evam yasyasi pandava. And that's the first part of it. Spiritual knowledge always has two components. One is, it detaches us from material world and material sense objects. And yena drakshasi. Drakshasi means to see. Bhut. What do you see? You see all living entities, atmanya athomai. You will see that all living beings are in me and are mine. So, this is the first time in the 4th chapter of the Gita, after the Yathamam Prapadyante verse, where Krishna talks about his supreme position. And not just his supreme position, he is talking about his relationship with the living entities. The clearest verses will come later in the 15th chapter, where Mamam Shojiva Loke and Uttama Purusha Tvanya, those verses come in 15.7 and 15.16, 17, 18. But here, Atmanya Atho Mai. Now the Mai is a possessive verb. It's my. Krishna is not saying it's I. You will not see all living entities to be me. You will see all living entities to be mine. So, Krishna is, so the second part that he says is, you will be able to see all living entities as connected with me, as related with me. So in this, that means spiritual knowledge transforms our vision of material reality and provides us vision about the spiritual reality. How does it transform our vision about material reality? Yajyatma na punar moham evam yasas. That means we think of this material world as meant for our enjoyment. It shall transform that vision. It's not meant for our enjoyment. It is actually meant for Krishna's service. And that moha is removed. And then we see, there is a special vision. We see all living entities as parts of Krishna. And in that we are related to Krishna, and through Krishna related to us. And another point Krishna is saying, na punar moham. You will never again fall into illusion. So once Satsarupa Maharaj, in the early days, 1967-68, he asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, is there a state of Krishna consciousness if we attain, we will never fall back? Now we know if we go back to the spiritual world, we will never fall back from there. But what about in this world? Prabhupada said, yes, there is. We can. If we become sufficiently advanced, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Antalila, when Sarvadamodara is chastising Bhagavan Acharya, he says, even if one hears Mayavad philosophy, even a person from Vaikuntha can fall down. Now that is a rhetorical statement. Because first of all, Vaikuntha, nobody is going to speak Mayavad philosophy. But to express the danger of Mayavad philosophy, that statement is made. But the point is that actually, generally speaking, if one goes beyond anartha nirutti, it is very unlikely that somebody will fall down. Once one goes beyond to nishtha, strong during nishtha and beyond nishtha. Very unlikely. Of course, at that time, if one falls, it's mainly because of Vaishnava Prada. Otherwise, one will not fall. Now, generally, when Krishna speaks one path, you know, he glorifies that path. This chapter is called Transcendental Knowledge. What is this jnana? As of now, this jnana is not exactly about bhakti. But the jnana is the jnana for karma yoga. Because when one is to practice karma yoga, one has to be detached. And what is the basis for that detachment? The basis is that I am not the body and the soul, and I am connected with the absolute truth. The exact nature of that connection is not yet clear. Although to some extent it is clear, in 4.6 Krishna says that Bhutanam Ishvaro Pisan, that I am the Lord of all living entities. That means all living entities are the servants. But even if one acquires the basic knowledge, yes, there is God and I am His servant, and I have to serve Him, I am not the body and the soul, then that knowledge itself is enough to take a person across material existence. So, Arjuna may get a question, yes, you are saying that one can become free from illusion, but you are talking about knowledge. You know, isn't it that to acquire this knowledge one has to be intellectual, one has to be in goodness, one has to be pure hearted, one has to be pious? Krishna says no, nothing is required. The board of knowledge itself is enough. That's the next verse. Api chedasi papebhyah sarvebhyah papakrittamah sarvam jnanaplave naiva vrijinam santarishyati. Rijinam. Rijinam is the ocean of misery. Santarishyasi. Tarishyasi means to cross over. So, even if you are the most sinful of all sinners, api chedasi papebhya. Now, in one sense, there is a contradiction in this verse. If somebody is sinful, how can that person be in knowledge? Because one effect of sin is that it creates ignorance. Now, when a person does sinful activity, it covers this consciousness, it creates ignorance. So, actually it's a vicious cycle. Because of ignorance we commit sin, and as a reaction to sin we get into ignorance. So it's like a vicious loop. Ignorance creates sin, sin creates ignorance, and like that we just go on getting trapped and suffering. But how is a person, if he is papebhya, how will he be able to situate himself in jnana plava, in the boat of knowledge? That is by Tadvidhi Pratipate, by the mercy of the spiritual master. So, in this verse is specifically glorifying transcendental knowledge, but it is also indirectly glorifying the person who gives this transcendental knowledge. Because if person is sinful, he himself does not have the faculty, the ability, the clarity to acquire spiritual knowledge by his own endeavor. Now we see, when Srila Prabhupada went to the West, the people, this first audience was quite degraded from the Vedic point of view, but because they just accepted what he was telling, they got into the boat of transcendental knowledge and they were elevated. So the process of spiritual knowledge is not so much intellectual as it is devotional. It is intellectual also, but the intellect is subordinated to devotion. And when one approaches a spiritual master in a devotional way, one's disqualifications don't matter, as long as one is ready to follow the instruction of the spiritual master. So now, after describing in this verse, Krishna in the next verse will describe how does the mechanism work that somebody is sinful, still he will cross over the ocean. So, you know, the Yogavidya uses a lot of analogies from nature. So this verse used analogy from nature of the boat. So, next verse is the analogy of a fire to describe how the process of transcendental knowledge works. Yathai dhamsi samidho agnir bhasmasat kurute arjuna jnanami sarva karmani bhasmasat kurute tatha. So this Jnanagni was referred to in 4.19 also. Yasya sarve samarambha kama sankalpa vrajita jnanavidagdha karmana tamaho panditam buddha. So Jnanagni, knowledge is compared to a fire. Now in Vedic culture, Agni was a very important god, and Agni is actually considered to be a purifier. Like yesterday we were discussing, the smoke was also said to be purifying. So when something is offered to Agni, then that object becomes a sacrifice which purifies. So another practical understanding is that whenever something is offered to fire, that particular object gets burnt and destroyed. So all the sinful activities that we have done, they are like seeds. They get fried, they get burned by transcendental knowledge. And then one becomes purified by that. So here Krishna uses the analogy of fuel. Put fuel in fire, it gets burned. But fuel, it has to be put in the right kind of fire, so that the fire burns the fuel and fire doesn't burn the person who puts the fuel. The analogy of fire is also used for lust. So, you know, lust, when you put fuel in it, what happens? Lust blazes further and further. So what is there also one is doing karma, here also one is doing karma. But that karma is in ignorance, this karma is in knowledge. And that's what makes the difference. So now, in the next verse, so these three verses, the first verse, 35, describe the this effect of transcendental knowledge. And then 36, 37, 38 are describing the glory of transcendental knowledge. 38 is the concluding verse in this series. Nahi jnanena sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate tasvayam yoga samsiddhah kalena atmani vindati.
In this world, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism, and one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time.
Kalena atmani vindati. Vindati means to enjoy. Kalena, in due course of time. So the nature of spiritual knowledge is the more one acquires it, the more one develops a taste for it, the more one relishes it. And actually, as a devotee advances, he may become more and more active in his preaching, he may become more and more busy because of his responsibilities and services. But it's also that a devotee becomes more and more satisfied. The materialistic mind cannot comprehend how satisfaction will not lead to inactivity or lack of ambition. Materialistic people, if you tell them, you should be satisfied with what you have, they think it's antithetical to the modern culture. Because modern culture is all about ambition. Be ambitious, go out, achieve, accomplish, show to the world how great you are. And then if you're satisfied, then what is the motive for ambition? But there are two kinds of ambitions. And there are two kinds of motivations for activity. One is to try to fill the emptiness of our heart. And the second is to share the fullness of our heart. That means when a materialistic person is active and ambitious, it's because he is dissatisfied with what he has. And that's why he's running around. You know, I have to earn money, I have to get a job, I have to get a car, I have to get a spouse, and so many things like that. So he's trying to fill the emptiness of his heart. On the other hand, when a devotee is active, he is not empty in his heart. He is full in his heart and he wants to share the fullness of his heart. So, actually the more service to Krishna we render, the more we become internally satisfied. And then the motivation is that when we are satisfied, we want to share the satisfaction with others. So, kalena atmani vindati. The more we practice spiritual life, we will find that our attraction to Krishna will gradually but steady, gradually but surely increase. And the same festivals that we attend year after year, we find that we develop a deeper taste. We find that we can relish Krishna more. And we keep serving Krishna more and more and more. Then our relationship with Krishna starts deepening. And then kale atmani vindati. So before that he says, nahi jnanena sadrusham. That as compared to jnana, pavitram iha vidyate. And the word iha is used by Krishna in several places in the Bhagavad Gita. And it means in this world. For materialistic people, you see, in this world, you know, what other world is there apart from this? That is one of our standard ISKCON usages, which people don't understand. Now, we are all suffering in this world. What is it? There is no other world apart from this. Jinayaha marnaya. So, especially when we write to outside people, we cannot use, they don't understand this world, the next world. They don't have any idea of the next world. Probably they think of next world means some
Star Wars, some other some other planet over there, some aliens will come from there.
So, but here, actually, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna in a culture where there is a whole hierarchy. Arjuna knows that there are heavens and there is a higher eternal abode also. So he said, in this world, Pavitram iha vidyate, there is nothing in this world which is as pure as transcendental knowledge. So, though, this transcendental knowledge which Krishna is referring to is bhakti. Although he doesn't explicitly mention it in bhakti. See, everything in the Bhagavad Gita, there is a bheda and abheda relationship in bhakti. So, when sometimes Prabhupada translates karma yoga as bhakti yoga, it's not accurately, it's not wrong in that sense. Why? Because there is karma yoga, if it is done with the attitude of service to the Lord, it becomes bhakti yoga. So, we have to look at everything in a analytical and a synthetic way. No, analytic and synthetic way. Analytic means what? You try to cut things apart. This. Okay, this section is this. This section is this. And the modern Western mind, which all of us have mostly acquired also, is highly analytical. Whereas the Vedic mind is synthetic. Now, what is the difference between analytic and synthetic? Analysis means to cut things apart into different sections. Synthetic means synthesize, means to unite. So now we see, how does a child learn language? Does he learn, oh, this word is an adjective, this word is a noun, this word is a pronoun, this word is an adverb? So he just learns to speak. How? Because he sees the language being spoken, he hears the language being spoken, and he starts speaking. And actually, many people can speak a language very well, but when it comes to grammar, they get frightened. Grammar that is so technical and complicated. So the child's way of learning language is synthetic. He sees the language working, he sees the language being spoken, and he starts speaking it. On the other hand, now if somebody gets a job in Germany and he wants to learn German, then he has never been to Germany, he is not talking with anybody with German, with anyone, sitting and looking at the grammar book and trying to learn. It's very difficult. It will be artificial. This is, a verb comes before a verb comes after a noun, and it comes, adjective comes before, adverb comes afterwards. Right? All are also technical and dry. So, the analytic way is especially for the human sciences. Those subjects are directly related with the human personality. The analytic way doesn't work so well. So that's why we can to some extent analyze the Bhagavad Gita. This section is this. But we have to understand that actually the Bhagavad Gita is a unified message. It is one message, and that's why everything is connected with bhakti, in the sense that it can be seen to be bhakti, it can be seen to be as a progression to bhakti. So that's why bheda and abheda relationship is there. And if you try to go too much into the analytic zone, then we miss out on the essence. Because the essence of the language is not just to analyze. This is a, for example, if somebody speaks, if I am speaking, now somebody should say, he used this adjective before this word, and he paused over there. Probably there was a comma over there. Mm-hmm. That is the grammar is not important. The message is important. So like that, and the analysis is meant only for us to understand the message, and the message is understood not by analysis but by synthesis. The message is understood. If you take a sentence, if somebody has never heard a language being spoken, and this word means this, and then you look at the dictionary, the 10 words in a sentence, take all the words together and try to make sense out of the sentence. It's quite complicated, because every word can have 2-3 meanings, and then by permutation combination you can have 35 possible meanings from a literalistic point of view. But we immediately synthesize, this sentence means this. Why? Because we use the language as a part of our culture. That similarly, when spirituality is to be understood, it's understood through a culture. So those academic scholars who don't adapt the culture of spirituality and try to distance themselves and try to understand it. So they basically specialize in semantics. Semantics means the meaning of the study of the meanings of words. And that doesn't lead to spiritual understanding. Because spiritual understanding is not just analytical, it is synthetic. So we can take things apart, but ultimately we have to bring things together. We have to bring things together so that we can see them spiritually. So all this is also bhakti. And when it is bhakti, nahi jnanena sadrusham pavitram iha bhakti. That there is nothing in this world as pure as this. It has a supreme purifying potency. Tat swayam yoga samsiddha. Now if, why are you saying that this is bhakti? Because Krishna is telling this is the fruit of transcendental knowledge. Normally we know the hierarchy, karma yoga comes below, then comes dhyana yoga, and then ultimately comes bhakti yoga. And Krishna is telling over here that this knowledge is the fruit of mysticism, fruit of yoga. When you come to yoga samsiddhi is actually samadhi. When one comes to yoga samsiddhi, at that time one will relish this knowledge. So basically Krishna is hinting that through this knowledge, when one performs knowledge in karma yoga, then one will rise to the stage of bhakti yoga. And then one will relish. So one will actually be rising up the yoga ladder to its perfection. So this knowledge, it will cross across the ocean. That means it will take us to the perfection of life. And at that time, one will be able to relish it. But one thing, kale, no, it may take time. It may take time. So we have to be patient in spiritual life. Now, if we are impatient, then one of the problems with impatience is that it's motivated by passion. And as long as we are in passion, we cannot really realize spiritual knowledge. So, what is the basis for a devotee's patience? The patience is based firstly on knowledge. Yes, I have been in this material world for a long time. And the conditionings have been there for a long time. I have myself activated them. So now I am trying to deactivate them. It will take time, just like, you know, train is moving very fast, and even put the brake, turn off the engine, still it will not stop. It will go on, go on, go on. And most of us, you know, we don't turn off the engine, and we put the leg on the brake and sometimes take it off also.
Sometimes we reactivate our conditions. So then how can we expect that the conditions will go away so easily?
That's a kalena. A devotee has to be patient. And actually, the patience that is demanded for us is not much. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy and Prabhupada's mercy. If you say later on in the 7th chapter of Shantan, Bhunam Janmanavante. But for us, if we just practice Krishna consciousness for one lifetime, Krishna will take care of us. So we have to be, it's very important to be patient and not expect overnight magical results. To some extent, the magical results happen in the initial phase of our spiritual life. No, all our bad habits fall away. You know, we may be smoking, we may be drinking tea, coffee, watching television, and all arthas just fall away. It's quite dramatic. Because these arthas are grosser. And the grosser victims, just like when the enemy is visible, to shoot the enemy is very easy. But when the enemy is subtle, then it becomes more difficult to shoot the enemy. So it's like that. The anarthas, what happens is the gross manifestation of the anarthas, they get eliminated for our life. The subtle manifestations, they stay. And they take time to be eliminated. But they will get eliminated. Now, in the next two verses after this, Krishna will tell what is the qualification for this transcendental knowledge and what is the disqualification for transcendental knowledge. So he has glorified so much. So 39th is qualification. Shraddha valabhate jnanam tatpara samyatendriya. Jnanam labha param shantim achirenadhi gacchati. Yes. So param shantim. Now this verse will become the source of misunderstanding for Arjuna, which will lead to the question in the next chapter. Because for Arjuna still is thinking of shanti in terms of not fighting the war. Arjuna has used Krishna as the param shanti, the supreme peace, but still shanti, yes. And so if you see peace, and moreover, when you acquire knowledge, you will attain peace. Knowledge means yes. And acquire knowledge, I'll understand, there's no need to fight on this. These Kauravas also belonging to Krishna only. Atmanya Thomai. So why should I fight? So that's how the misunderstanding will come. But what will Krishna say? Yes, Kauravas are also mine. I also care for them. But right now I've seen that they are on the wrong track and they have to be disciplined. Right. Coming to our point of knowledge, That is Shraddhaval Labhate Jnanam. That who are the people who acquire knowledge? They are the faithful people. Shraddhaval. So now, faith is a very difficult concept for modern people to understand. The modern attitude primarily is a skeptical attitude. It's a rational attitude. And in the rational attitude, there is anything spiritual, anything which is beyond sensory perception, is to do with skepticism. However, we see that faith is essential even in modern science. Actually, in modern science itself, there is a debate whether, like, you know, there is pratyaksha, anuman, and shabda. So, pratyaksha is direct sensory perception, anuman is rational reasoning or logic, and shabda is scriptural testimony. So, when we talk about faith, generally we talk about it in terms of we should have faith in scriptural testimony. But in science, there are these two ways of acquiring knowledge, pratyaksha and anuman, empiricism and rationalism. So, actually, both empiricism and rationalism demand faith. If you see, empiricism, that means sense perception, that is based on the assumption that what we see with our senses is actually the truth. What we see with our senses is actually the truth. So, that the external world exists the way it actually is. This is the basis of empiricism. I mean, what's so wrong about that? It exists. I can touch this, I can see it, it's there. But actually, rationalism is anuman. That says that actually what is more important is that the world should be logically and rationally understood. And what has happened is, especially in modern science, as science has progressed in two directions, physics has progressed into quantum physics and relativity. So when it progresses into quantum physics, the world picture that we get to quantum physics is basically just waves. So waves, if you see at a fundamental level, according to quantum physics, there is no particles existing. It's only waves and probability functions. So then the big question comes up, how do we sense particles? How I sense is a hard matter. But it's only waves. How do waves coagulate to form hard matter? This is the quantum world and the world as we experience it. There's a big gap between the two. And scientists, especially those who are in favor of quantum theory, say this world is real. Why this world is real? Because, you know, it works. You can see our mathematics. We do our equations, we get the results. You know, we can make so much technology work through quantum physics. So the technology works. But it's completely counter-observational. Counter-observational means, as I said, we see hard particles over there. But according to quantum physics, there are no particles at all. That's why when quantum physics developed, Einstein was so disturbed. You know, Einstein was a proponent of relativity, and Niels Bohr and others were proponents of quantum physics. So, as quantum physics, the mathematically they were working out better and better and better. So, but it just didn't make any sense to Einstein. So Einstein, towards the end of his life, he said, you know, I feel as if the ground under my feet has been pulled away and there is no place anywhere where I can put my feet. So, Einstein actually, towards the end of his life, he was very frustrated because he wanted to unite the two, he couldn't unite the two. Relativity was working in its own field, but quantum applications are spreading far and wide. So the point is that now, that means here there is a fight between pratyaksha and anuman. So, so empirical sense perception, this is the original purpose of our science was what? Okay, if I see an object falling down, why does it fall down? So to explain pratyaksha to anuman, isn't it? So pratyaksha was considered primary and anuman is secondary. The objects fall down actually, because the objects fall down, we propose a theory of gravity to explain the objects. But then what happened? Actually, as long as our theory works nicely, the mathematics works nicely, whether you see the particles or not, it doesn't matter only. Yeah, theory works fine. So, actually, this is a big debate in modern science between the rationalists and the empiricists. And so, science itself is based on faith. So, it's based on conflicting faith. Sometimes some scientists argue, you know, your religious people are fighting so much. Different religious people have different theories of who God is, from where the world came, and there is so much conflict. But actually within science there is so much conflict also. So, because, you know, without faith, we cannot acquire knowledge. Any sort of knowledge that I have to acquire, we have to acquire through faith. You know, in the Buddhist meditation, there is one form of meditation. What they do is, they see some scene of nature, and they close their eyes and they try to see that scene of nature in their vision. They try to see it as real as possible, as real as possible. And they try to enter into it and experience it. Now we may also try to enter into and experience Krishna Leela. But their purpose is what? When you try to enter and experience it, you see. And then you open your eyes, you see it's not there. So just as that is illusory, even this is illusory.
So, this world is false. They try to do meditation like that. So, the point is that actually, you know, even our model, even our empirical self-perception is based on faith.
Shaddhava labhate jnanam. So, the modern attitude is that faith is a sign of intellectual weakness and doubt or skepticism is a sign of intellectual strength. Yeah, now the Bhagavatam also agrees. It says only an intelligent person can be doubtful. But it says doubt is not the only symptom of intelligence. Just like, you know, if a patient is sick and he goes to anybody and everybody and the doctor says, okay, you take this medicine, okay, you have got stomach pain, we have to do surgery. You should be a little doubtful. Is surgery really necessary? So doubt can tell us what is false, but doubt can never tell us what is true. That is the real problem with doubt. Doubt can tell us what is wrong, but doubt in itself can never tell us what is right. So therefore, you know, any doctor that a patient goes to, he can always keep doubting him. But the problem is, he will never be cured. So, one has to put faith at some point or other. Without that, one cannot live. And even science progresses because it puts faith. So doubt is useful, but beyond a particular point, when explanations are provided at an at least basic and sufficient level, then one has to put faith. Shraddhava labhate jnanam. That's why the bhakti begins with adau shraddha. Then the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shraddhana munayo jnana vairagayukta, that famous words in the chapter Divinity and Divine Service, second chapter of the first canto. Actually, Prabhupada translates Shraddha in a very interesting way. Prabhupada translates Shraddha as the seriously inquisitive sage. Now, from a dictionary point of view, faith and serious inquisitiveness have nothing in together, got nothing in common. But as I say, Prabhupada is not just giving us a literal translation. Prabhupada is giving us a culture. See, in the Semitic religious traditions, you say your spiritual life begins with faith. Yes, accept Jesus is the savior. Accept Muhammad is the way to Allah. Begin with faith. So, if you see the Vedic culture, it doesn't begin with faith. It begins with Athato Brahma Jignasa. So, when Prabhupada translates faith as serious inquisitiveness, that means be seriously inquisitive. Is there something beyond this world? Is there some higher reality to life? And then start from there. So, serious inquisitiveness means not that we accept whatever that anyone says, but most people are very casual about what happens after death. Maybe something happens, maybe something doesn't happen, but anyway, like, what is happening in my life right now? I have to take care of that. So, serious inquisitiveness means that there could be something beyond this world also. Life has to have an ultimate meaning and purpose. And seriously inquires about it. So, just like when one is sick, you know, one is seriously inquisitive for a doctor. Isn't it? Because I understand it's a matter of life or death. It's a matter of sickness or relief from sickness. So that is serious inquisitiveness. It is not blind faith, nor is it perpetual skepticism. But it is serious inquisitiveness, try to find the truth. So that's Shraddhava Labhate Jnanam. So this kind of faith, that means the faith, there could be something higher. Let me be seriously inquisitive about it. That will lead to knowledge. Shraddhava labhate jnanam, but it's not only faith. No. In the Semitic religions, their spirituality begins with faith and ends in faith. You accept Jesus as Savior, that's all you accept throughout your life. But there's not much transformation practically speaking. There's no progression on which one can go ahead. So that's why Shraddha is the first thing. Shraddha has two more things one has to do to acquire spiritual knowledge. Tatparaha Sanyate Indriyaha. So, tatparaha means one should become attached. One should inquire about the absolute truth, one should become attached to that absolute truth. And secondly, Sanyate Indriyaha. One should be regulated in one's indulgence in this world. So, a serious that faith leads to these two things. If there is something higher, then I want to know about it. I want to become attached to it. And then, I'm not so attached to things of this world. So these two are actually the practical way in which the faith is expressed. So without that practical expression of the faith as attachment to the absolute truth and detachment from the relative truths, that knowledge will not fructify. Tatparaha sanyate indriyaha. And when one does this, that's why Srila Prabhupada is asked by John Lennon, what is the symptom of a guru? Prabhupada said, one who is addicted to Krishna. Tatparaha. One is addicted to Krishna. And yes, somebody may say that I am addicted to Krishna, but then somebody may be engaging in sense gratification also, as the sahajiyas seem to do. Therefore, sanyate indriya. So both have to be there. Bhakti paresha anubhava virakti ranyatra cha. Paraisha anubhava tatparaha. Virakti anyatra cha sanyate indriya. So both these happen. And then, jnanam labdhva param shanti achiren adi gacchati. So now interestingly Krishna is over achiren, not a long time. Just now our previous verse says kalen atmani vindati. It will take a long time. No, don't worry, it's not so long time. Achiren adi gacchati. So actually long and short are relative terms. You know, we may, from our point of view, one lifetime is a long time to practice spiritual life. But for yogis, they were ready to do it for so many lifetimes. So from the point of view of eternity, it is achieved. It's not such a long time actually. You soon acquire spiritual knowledge. Now in the next verse, Krishna will characterize the faithless people. Agyascha shraddhadhanascha samshayatma vinashyati nayam lokosti na paro sukham samshayatmana. One time Prabhupada was giving a lecture in America, and that time one person asked, Swamiji, your teachings sound like the teachings of Buddha. So Prabhupada, do you follow Buddha? There is no Swami. Prabhupada, follow Buddha, follow Jesus, follow Krishna, follow someone, don't just talk. Don't just talk. Why? Because if you follow, if it is the path is right, you will understand it is right. If it is wrong, you will understand it is wrong. But if you don't follow, we will never understand. You know, if one goes to a doctor's clinic and just sits and observes the doctor and doesn't take the prescription, he will never come to know whether the doctor is good or bad. That's why we will just follow somebody. Don't just talk. So, samshayatma vinashyati. If somebody is a perpetual doubter, then the person will be lost. He will never gain anything in life. It's interesting, you see the contrast in material in modern society. People are so skeptical about spiritual truths and they are so gullible about material things. You know, some of the advertisements that we see, they are so preposterous. Where you purchase this house and you will be in the middle of nature and you will, it will be like Nainital or some hill station. You cannot have a place like that in a metropolitan city. People see that, yes, and they believe it. If you look at some of the advertisements, you don't have to, but if you chance to look at them, you'll see that actually they make such false promises and unfortunately people are so gullible. So actually, why is it that people fall prey to the advertisements which are basically promises? It's because the desire is there. See, when the desire is there, then the faith comes automatically. When the desire is not there, the faith will not come. Because why? Mattaha smutir jnanam apohanam cha. If I have a desire to enjoy sense gratification, then whoever promises sense gratification, immediately I'll have it. So, on the other hand, if I have no desire for surrendering to God, then no matter whatever, however reasonable somebody gives explanation, actually, I will always find some doubts. I will always find some questions which I feel are not answered. So essentially, ultimately, the quest for knowledge boils down to our desires. If we change our desires, then knowledge will follow automatically. If we hold on to our materialistic desires, then knowledge will never come. So now in this verse, Krishna talks about three levels. So samshayatata is a general category, but avyascha ashaddhadanasya. Avya is one who doesn't have any spiritual knowledge at all, just completely ignorant, living like an animal. So ashaddhadana is that one who has that knowledge but he doesn't put faith. Okay, yes, people say there is a God, people say there is a path to go back to God, but who knows about it? Ashaddhadana. He has knowledge but no faith. And third is samshayatma. That means one who has knowledge, one who starts also on a process, but keeps doubting, samshaya. Will this work? Will this not work? Will this work? Will this not work? And if he keeps doubting like that, then he never gets any result. Why? Because if we are doubting, how can we offer our heart to Krishna? If we are doubting even the existence of Krishna, how can we possibly offer our heart to Krishna? So, that's why in the Bhagavad Gita, several places Krishna uses the word sarva bhavena bhavita. You know, aham sarvasya prabho matta sarvam pravartate. Iti matva vyate buddha bhava sabandita, with the whole heart. So yes, ultimately we have to take a leap of faith. We have to take a leap of faith. Without taking that leap of faith, we cannot get to know God. But there is also a foundation of spiritual knowledge which can act as a springboard for us to take that leap of faith. But ultimately, when we start practicing, we have to put faith at some time. And if we will not put faith, then actually we are putting faith in material life. You cannot live without putting faith. You're putting faith in. I just live like a normal person, like everyone else. But all the normal people are putting faith in material life. They are thinking, yes, if I earn money, if I get a job, I'll become happy. So that is also a faith which we can see is baffled. People grow old, people get diseased, people die. So, in one sense, putting faith in material life is a lost cause. Whereas putting faith in my spiritual life, it could possibly at least, be a genuine cause. And we can put faith and we can see whether it works or not. So now, in the next two verses, Krishna will give a call for action. So, yoga sanyasta karmanam jnana sanchinna samshayam atmavantam na karmani vipajnanti dharanchaya.
Therefore, one who has renounced the fruits of his action.
One action devotional service is nothing in the fruits of his action, and whose doubts have been destroyed by transcendental knowledge, is situated actually in the self. Thus, he is not bound by the reactions of the world, O conqueror of the world. Yes. So now, in this verse, reinforces Arjuna's misconception which arose from the word Shanti in the 39th verse. Because Krishna is saying two things, yoga and jnana. Arjuna can't realize, how can yoga and jnana be done with a bow and arrow? So, yoga sanyasta karmanam. By yoga, renounce work. Yes, I wanted to renounce it better. Jnana sanchinna samshaya. This knowledge destroys all your doubts. Yes, to acquire knowledge, you know, I have to sit and contemplate, study scripture, to practice yoga, I have to give up my karma. Jnana sanchinna karmanam. Atmavantam na karma. Situate yourself in the self. Yes, situate yourself. Atma. Think about it.
So, conception is getting reinforced.
Nivadnandi, then you will not be bound. Yes, if I contemplate, if I do yoga, I will not be bound. Head there, Arjuna is mentally prepared, and suddenly, the next verse completely stuns Arjuna. So, what does he say in the next verse?
Tasmadajnana sambhutam jnana asinatmanaha. Vainam samshayam yogam atishto tishta bharata.
So uttishta, rise and fight.
So, yeah, again, translation. Stand and fight. So now till now, Krishna was using a very pacifist sort of
analogies for knowledge. You know, it's like a fire, it's like a boat, suddenly like a sword.
So, Gyan Asir Atmana. Knowledge is like a sword. Take up the knowledge, cut off it.
Kill all the doubts. Jnana sambhutam. So that doubt is evolved from knowledge, from ignorance, just kill them. And rise, Arjuna, and fight. So Arjuna will ask Krishna, what is happening?
But as you see, essentially what Krishna is telling Arjuna is that actually knowledge is a foundation for action.
So therefore, when we practice bhakti, the bhakti is founded on knowledge.
Therefore, whenever actually you feel discouraged in bhakti, it's often because of ajnana sambhutam. So if you try to acquire knowledge in a devotional way from the scriptures, you'll find that this verse is a very beautiful, inspiring call for action. Whenever you feel discouraged, whenever you feel feel something is going wrong in life, things are not working out, you understand, this is just an illusion. Temporarily things will appear. That thing, just like Dhruva Maharaj, he was fighting, and suddenly there was an illusion where from all sides there were demons attacking and there were mountains falling on him, there was fire coming, and then what did the sages tell him? Remember the absolute truth, chant his holy name, and then all illusions disappear. So like that, there will be so many obstacles coming in our life, but you should know, tasma jnana sambhutam, that's all. Jnana asina atmana, chitvainam samshaya. So whatever doubts are coming, whatever difficulties are coming, if we just acquire spiritual knowledge, then we will be able to get the vision to see beyond them. Flash off all the doubts. It's not that difficulties will go away, but actually what happens is when the difficulties come, we lose our morale. And when we lose our morale, then the difficulties become bigger than what they are. But if we don't lose our morale, so what happens is we get the inner strength to face the difficulties and to go on. So this is the message of the Bhagavad Gita, that with knowledge, slash off the doubts that have come before, ignorance. One of the doubts that a practicing devotee gets is, that actually, is Krishna really watching me? Is Krishna really caring for me? Krishna is there in the spiritual world, I am facing so many problems and the problems are not going away. Is Krishna really there? But actually, you know, we shouldn't think of Krishna's reciprocation in the simplistic terms. Sometimes the problems themselves may be Krishna's mercy also. Because the problem they force us to take shelter of Krishna. So sometimes the Krishna may take away the problems so that he shows us his mercy. So Krishna may sometimes send problems to make us take shelter of him, that is also his mercy. You know that Krishna is always present, Krishna is always reciprocating. But the way he reciprocates may not be immediately comprehensible. Therefore, when we understand Krishna's love and Krishna's wisdom, then ajnana sambhutam, all doubts that have come because of knowledge, chitvainam samshayam yogam. With the sword of knowledge, we cut them off and move forward enthusiastically in devotional service. So, any question? Yes, please. Yes. See, that's why when Prabhupada is talking about follow somebody, that commitment is in a practical, action-oriented sense. That is not just in an official designation sense. You see, many people, they are Christians or Muslims or Buddhists. They are, as we discussed earlier, they are in the bodily conception. I think this is my path. So eventually, a person has to ask this question, am I attached to religion or am I attached to God? So religion is a pathway to God. Just like if I am in a university, if I go to university for studies a computer engineering. Okay, then I find okay, computer engineering, then up to graduate studies is good over here. But afterward is not so good. Then if I find that okay, then in Massachusetts they have very good artificial intelligence studies going on. So I'll go there. Nothing wrong in that. So am I attached to computer science or am I attached to the institute? I mean, one says it's so obvious, nobody will be attached to the institute. People will be interested in knowledge. But unfortunately, because religion becomes a bodily designation, then people get attached. This is my religion. That's why even for us as devotees, you know, our spiritual advancement, or rather,
our commitment to our path should not increase our false ego.
Yes.
This path is the greatest, so I am the greatest. No. If that happens, if people commit to a path not in a practical, not for a practical transformation, but just to build a false ego, then it's become very, very difficult for them to change. But otherwise, even if somebody doesn't change, one can incorporate insights from different paths and one can synthesize one's spiritual advancement also. So yes, Prabhupada is talking about committing, it's in a practical action-oriented sense. It's not an egoistic sense where one wants to prove my path is the best. That's why, no, the purpose of spiritual life is not to prove but to improve.
You know, by improving we will be doing the proving also. But if you only try to do the proving without the improving, then it becomes egoistic.
The primary purpose of spiritual life is not to prove but to improve. Yes, last question.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a cycle over there. The question is that here it is said that faithful person he acquires knowledge, then he controls his senses, and then again he acquires knowledge. So actually there's a progression here. First there is faith. Sraddhava labhate jnanam. He acquires, by faith one acquires knowledge. Tatparah sanyate jnaya. So then along with that knowledge, when one acquires knowledge, then one gets inspired to become attracted. There is tatpara. And that knowledge will also lead to sanyata indriya. That knowledge will also lead to self-control. And when there is knowledge, there is attachment and there is self-control. And these three together will lead to shanti. Jnanam labdhva param shanti. The ultimate fruit is that supreme peace. That supreme peace is when we harmonize our lives with God. No, most of our agitation is because we have our plans, Krishna has his plans. And that's why the agitation comes up. But when we surrender our will to Krishna, Krishye Vachinam Tava, then that is the supreme peace that will come. So, the progression is that with faith we acquire knowledge. By knowledge there is attachment to the Supreme Lord and this indifference or detachment from this world. By this that knowledge itself deepens further. And then all these three together comprise a process which will lead to inner peace.
Krishna?
So,
when Prabhupada is telling
dedicated in the translation,
that means attached
one. Yeah, dedicated tatparah. So, now, dedicated tatparah means that one has to actually commit oneself. Without committing oneself to living that spiritual knowledge, that knowledge won't fructify. So, how do we become dedicated? By practicing the process. That's why, this is Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha. In Sadhu Sangha, we will get some primary knowledge. Then there is the dedication. Tatparah is bhajana kriya. When we start practicing in a committed way this devotional process, then we will make spiritual advancement. Okay? We can discuss more afterwards. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Sai Gaur Premanandi.